Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Underrated Movie Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss films that are underrated, underappreciated, and ones that have slipped under the radar. I am your host, Derek McDuff, and today is Christmas. Merry Christmas, everyone. So we've got a special Christmas episode for you here. We're going to be discussing the 2017 Christmas zombie musical, Anna and the Apocalypse, and this film was brought to me by a very special Christmas guest, and that would be Art from A Cozy Christmas Podcast. Art, how you doing today?
Well, I'm doing great. Since today is Christmas, you know, this is the day I live for all year, so I'm doing pretty good today.
Yeah, right, because as the people may or may not know, based on the name of your podcast, you have your own Christmas podcast. So what do you want to let the people know about that?
Yeah, well, I do a Christmas podcast year round. I like to read stories on the podcast, especially more towards the Christmas season. I'll talk to authors who might have written a Christmas book or some kind of Christmas creative that has done music or art or actors. I've had some actors on before, just people involved in telling the story of Christmas in a variety of ways. And I love reading the old classics from, you know, like from the Victorian age, you know, the stories people equate with Christmas, like Christmas Carol, things like that. What's fun is that those stories, especially the Victorian stories, were often ghost stories. You get some that were sentimental and heartwarming and stuff like that. But a lot of times on Christmas Eve, you know, they would combine what we would think of as Halloween and Christmas, and they would stay up and tell ghost stories. And in fact, I've got a couple of the stories I read this past year actually have the scene set at Christmas time by the fire telling a ghost story. And sometimes they can be pretty funny. Sometimes they can be tragic, but yeah, it kind of runs the gamut.
Yeah, yeah. So there's always some good stuff to check out on that show. And it was like, yeah, you know, when it lined up that this year, I realized I have an episode coming out on Christmas Day. I've got to get the preeminent Christmas podcaster on my show, and to have him give me a recommendation for an underrated Christmas movie. And I think that you really came through in spades. You said, like you're saying, Christmas, the old Victorian stories, the Dickensian era, Victorian era of Christmas stories were a lot spookier, a lot ghost stories. So this, I think it fits right into that. And we were kind of talking about before, how do you think that this is one of your favorite Christmas films? That being, of course, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Anna and the Apocalypse, which is a Christmas zombie musical. I just love saying that. directed by John McPale, with a screenplay by Alan McDonald and Ryan McHenry, based on McHenry's BAFTA-nominated short zombie musical, with a ensemble cast of largely unknowns, with Ellen Hunt in the lead role. But why is this, you know, why was this your go-to underrated Christmas movie? Because I admit I had not heard of it before.
Mm. Yeah, I came across it just a couple years ago, in fact, and it's somehow that it's able to balance the tropes of a Christmas movie. You know, like Anna is trying to get back to home, for lack of a better term. You know, she's trying to get back to what's familiar, what's safe, to be there with her dad where they're hiding out at the school. But in between them is this apocalypse she has to get through. And it just reminded me of, you know, trying to get home during Christmas when the weather knocks out all the power and the planes are grounded and all that. So you have the decorations. There's a little bit of Christmas music in it. But then it also takes, you know, I've got a soft spot in my heart for zombie movies, which I don't get to talk about on my podcast. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk about this film. You know, and I love the character growth and the character journey all the kids go through in the film. It just really taps into time of year where you're kind of reflecting on life, and you know, it's the end of the year, it's a new year's coming, what's it going to hold, what's it going to bring, you often hope it's going to be good, and then they set that in, you know, in the middle of a zombie apocalypse, and then, you know, just for kicks and giggles, I guess they throw music in.
Yeah, no, this one was really great. Kind of talked about how it's a genre mashup, and I love a good genre mashup, mm-hmm. especially when it feels really appropriate. Like, it's taking two things which on the surface seem very very different, very on opposite ends of the spectrum, but upon closer inspection, their themes really line up. And I think that a Christmas musical and a zombie film are two things that really fit that bill. Because watching this, you know, you start to realize some stuff about how it really does completely work in both of those genres. And I think one of the big things about Christmas movies or about Christmas, it's something that a lot of people talk about, is how the holidays can feel kind of isolating, especially mm-hmm. for people who might not have the best family relationship, might have lost people. Anna, obviously, she doesn't have her mom isn't around anymore. And then you have Steph, who I think is probably my favorite character.
Yeah.
She, you know, she doesn't have anybody. Her girlfriend isn't there. Her parents are off on a trip. So that's kind of a recurring thing that so many people feel at Christmas, and so many Christmas movies address so well, is that isolation when it's like all this happy time and all this beautiful thing, and it's about being together, and you're just feeling very lonely. And mm-hmm. obviously, zombie movies are really about being lonely, well, feeling alone in the world, feeling like you are surrounded by zombies. It's the thing that genre fiction does so well, where it takes something metaphorical, feeling like you're alone and everyone around you is just kind of this unfeeling zombie that you can't relate to at all, and makes it literal. And the marriage of those two ideas is a match made in heaven. And it's something I'm like, wow, why didn't anybody think of this before? And right. It really works.
It really does. Yeah. When I first heard about it, I was skeptical. I heard about it on another Christmas podcast, and they were talking about the film, and I said, okay, you had me at zombie Christmas musical. Okay, I gotta check this out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely one that sparks the interest. It's you know, it's one of those great elevator pitch movies. You can describe this movie in a sentence and you're like, okay, I'm interested. And yeah. I didn't even know this was a musical at first. I knew it was a Christmas movie with zombies when you first pitched it to me. But then I kind of, when I was getting ready to watch it, I was like, oh, this is a musical too. And I got to say that the soundtrack in this is honestly pretty spectacular. I was really jamming on this. And it actually kind of inspired me to make a playlist for a lot of the great songs that have come up on movies that I've covered here before on the podcast. But I was like, I watched the movie and I was listening to the soundtrack afterward. How do you feel about the soundtrack?
Oh, I love the soundtrack, and I'll give you a kind of an inside peek into the life of those of us who love Christmas year round. We know that, you know, what we call the normal people, they don't, you know, want to hear, they don't want to hear Christmas music in August. But if I pop in the Anna and the Apocalypse soundtrack, hardly any of the songs sound Christmassy. So it can be like my little secret way of celebrating Christmas when nobody else will know. But every time I hear the soundtrack, it just gets better for me, you know, to hear it. And there were a couple that this time around really stuck out to me too, as just being a very powerful in its words, even more so than just the tune. But yeah, I love the soundtrack. It's fantastic.
Nice. What are those couple that stood out to you this time around?
Yeah, the one especially was towards the end. The song "I Will Believe," which is sung right after. I'm assuming we do spoilers.
Spoilers. Yeah.
Okay. You know, right after the part where her dad dies, and you know, there's this tragic moment in her life, which I'm like, no, why did you kill everyone off? You know, but as she's singing that song, it's like, I've had this tragedy now, you know, and we all will get to that point if we haven't already, that the day where our parents will be gone and we'll have to face life without them, depending on your relationship with your parents. You know, that's either good or bad, I guess. But you know, she says, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to have hope and I'm going to believe, you know, and it's just this very somber but hopeful determination on her part that at the beginning of the film, she was, I think, a little more uncertain about the future. But now, you know, she's determined and she's ready to tackle it, whatever happens. She has hope. She has faith, you know, that it's going to work out. And at the end of the day, you know, that's really what Christmas is all about, you could say.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a recurring theme in so many Christmas stories. It starts with this character who's kind of given up on a lot of things, given up on life, just very, very somber, or somebody who's just a Scrooge, you know, a Grinch.
Mm-hmm.
And not that saying that Anna is necessarily, but by the end of this, despite all the horrible things that happened, she is a much more hopeful character. And I think a lot of the characters are, and they get that classic drive off into the sunset ending that so many zombie films have, but it has a little bit more of a, well, I guess a lot of zombie films have that hopeful ending. And I think a lot of the Christmas films do too. So that once again goes with that kind of synergy of these two unexpected genres.
Yeah. One of my favorite songs, and I don't know if you want to go through the film in order or what, but another favorite that really,
well, yeah, just however it comes up, don't have to go through it sequentially, but you know, however you want to talk about it.
It's more towards the beginning of the film, the song "Turning My Life Around." You know, she comes out first thing in the morning, she's singing this happy song, she's dancing around while pure chaos reigns around her. It was, you know, you've got the cars crashing, the zombies eating each other. All of this is happening. She's completely clueless to it all. And the one thing I noticed is that the song is towards the end. It's her and John. They're literally singing and dancing in the graveyard. You know, there's a phrase I just learned recently. It's called whistling past the graveyard. You know, it implies like this idea that you're trying to avoid something that's really obvious. If I'm explaining that right. Hmm. And so it's like, you know, that obvious thing is we're all going to die someday. So we're just kind of whistling past the graveyard to pretend it's not there. And so I'm like, wait, are they literally, you know, whistling past the graveyard here? and that was something else that kind of jumped.
That's great.
Yeah. And I love that. Then of course the frosty zombie shows up at the end and and chaos reigns.
Yeah.
But yeah, that whole song, I think they did something similar in have you seen Shaun of the Dead?
one of my favorite, like this, and this definitely gave me a lot of Shaun of the Dead vibes, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. I think they had a similar scene like that in Shaun of the Dead, which is a fantastic movie on its own right. But I think I read in some of the trivia for the film that they were inspired. That was one of the films that inspired them. So you can see it's some nods to that film, I think. But yeah, it's a fantastic scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that especially that song that you were just talking about where they're all dancing and happy and while in the background, truly horrific things are happening, does something that I think all the songs in this movie do, which is you can have these really horrific things going on, but the movie doesn't feel that intense, despite it having all these gnarly zombie scenes that in most movies you would be like, oh, this is really horrific or horrifying. But here it's a lot more palatable. And the big reason for that, I think, is the film or the sound, you know, the music that's happening. And it yeah. just reminds me of something, you know, that I, from back in my college days when I took a film music class, and one of the things they talked about is that you can have these, the way you can blunt these intense moments is by putting the music on it. And one of the things that the professor did was he showed us the opening scene of Forrest Gump with the feather falling, and he did it with a bunch of different soundtracks. It's like, all right, this is now a horror movie, and like it was all, you know, intense and spooky. And then he's like, now it's like, you know, a musical, and it was a lot more upbeat. And that is really, you know, it speaks to the absolute power that a soundtrack can have, because it puts you in this state of mind. You're able to experience the zombie uprising and all this stuff that the characters are going through. But instead of just being like, oh, this is something I can't watch, you got to watch it through your fingers, or you're like, this has got to be a hard R. Yeah, the soundtrack in this really does a good job of putting you in a more Christmassy mindset, taking something that might have been like an R down to like a PG-13, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I don't know if you had any thoughts about any of that.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how music just impacts a scene. And I was noticing some of the songs, you know, though they weren't Christmas songs, they were, I could hear like jingle bells in the background. And it's kind of like this old joke that if you make any song and add jingle bells, it's a Christmas song, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I think it just, it's a subtle touch, but it really helps sell, you know, the Christmas atmosphere, even
right,
though
right.
it's not necessarily about Christmas itself. It just adds to that to make it a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it has those, it's like a cheat code. You can instantly just put in the jingle bells and you'll understand like, oh, this is Christmas. Like I remember even thinking of like on the Killers first album, and Killers have obviously done a bunch of Christmas songs, but the one Everything Will Be All Right has these like kind of bells shaking in the background. And I'm always just like, oh yeah, this is like a Christmas vibe. The song is not Christmas at all,
yeah.
but it instantly gives you those feelings. And I think that's something that while these songs, the lyrics might not be explicitly about Christmas, you do still have that vibe because we have the cultural touchstone of the jingle bells being like, no, this is a Christmassy sound.
Yeah. Although talking about Christmas songs, it does have one really great Christmas song in it. Oh, it's that song, It's That Time of Year, that they sung at the school Christmas play, the one young lady, what, I can't think of her name now.
Steph or?
Not Steph, the...
Lisa?
Lisa, yeah. She sings that Christmas yep. song that is just chock full of innuendos.
I have to add that to the rotation of songs like that you listen to every Christmas, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I love the line that you know, as the dad and the headmaster there, Savage, which is a great name.
Right, good name for a villain.
Yes, you know, it was actually during the penguins are trying to rap.
And yeah, that's such a great scene. You see them as zombies later on. It's such a good payoff.
Yeah, and the dad is like, well, at least they're trying. And then Mr. Savage is like, very. Love
so,
it.
So, yes. All right. Speaking of, you know, these characters, do you have any favorite characters from this movie?
Yeah, well, I do enjoy, I think with you, Steph, I think she has a very interesting character. They're all just so good. They have such a great journey. But my really, I think the one I identify with the most is John. Poor fella. John is, you know, he has such an unrequited love for Anna, and he's just this gentle Christmas loving guy who gets pulled into this horrific events, and he's such an interesting contrast to the other boy that survives the film, who is like very hard and bitter. He has to like kill his dad and everything because he turned into a zombie, and you know, it's a real interesting contrast. And the scene where Anna just basically friend zones him, you know, it's just like a gut punch. I'm like, she's like, "You're my best friend." Like, oh man, come on.
Yeah.
And when he gets bit by a zombie, when I first saw the film, I was like, no, no, they're supposed to live happily ever after. But then the setup for the movie is the song, you know, the Hollywood ending song, that life doesn't always give you that Hollywood ending. And then after you see the movie, then you go back, if you want to rewatch it, you see some of the characters you think should have survived, they don't. You know, even like the fact her dad gets it, you know, I'm like, that's just cruel. But I think it's what the film is trying to say is that, you know, as Anna is going out into real life, she's leaving the safety of home, and it's not always going to be that happy Hollywood ending that you get in movies. On one end, it's kind of it can be a downer, but also it, I think, can be uplifting too. It's kind of the strange combination of feelings by the end of the film.
Yeah, no, and I'm glad you brought up John and him getting, you know, quote unquote friend zoned, because I think that is, I really found all that interesting, because I was like, okay, I see what they're doing here. They're setting up the thing where it's this guy who's had a crush on her forever, and she's kind of maybe ignored him, and she like had this run in with this other guy who's a jerk, and they're gonna get together at the end of the movie. But then she has that moment, you're like, oh, okay, like I really appreciated that. Like, I did feel bad for John, but I also appreciated that it was like, yeah, like, you know, it's sometimes if you pine after this person, you expect them to be with you, it doesn't always work out. You sometimes your friend wants to be your friend, and that's all. They don't owe you anything or anything, and he accepts that, you know. I think that's a great moment for him. And then when he dies, it kind of like comes quickly out of nowhere. And that is one of the scenes where there isn't happy Christmas music playing in the background. It's intense. That is, I think, one of the most, even more than her dad's death scene, one of the most intense scenes in the movie. And then following that, this character you think is just going to be this foil for him, like this this jerk Nick, actually kind of comes back and becomes much more of a deeper, interesting character. And you see that they have this emotional connection, and as soon as I saw he had his cronies there, who just like, I was like, those guys are going to eat it in the next scene. Those guys are dead meat.
Yep. So,
and of course, you know, they go out, and I think that whole sequence when they're kind of making their way through the city to get to the school, that's the one I feel like the most Shaun of the Dead vibes, when it's like, okay, it's this group of people, they're getting there. You're getting to see these interpersonal relationships come out amongst this zombie thing. And, you know, they're taking out these zombies in creative and fun, interesting ways. I think it's such good iconography with her, with the big bloody candy cane and the blood on her face, like smacking zombies in the head.
Yeah.
It's even better than Shaun with the cricket bat. Cause it's like, oh yeah, this is that, you see that, you're like, Christmas zombie movie. Boom. There it is right there.
Right.
So I think it does a really good job utilizing that iconography. I mean, you being a Christmas expert, how do you feel about all the iconography in this movie?
Well, it's like you said, I love it. Although I do get some people who push back against, you know, using something as special as Christmas and then having this horrific events happening around it. But You know, I have a line, and I don't feel like this movie crosses that line at all, but I could be a disturbed person. I don't know, but
well, if you are, then I am too, because I had a blast with this. So.
but it's like you said, you see her with a bloody candy cane, and you know immediately, oh, zombie Christmas movie. You know, it's just boom. I think it's kind of fun to, I mean, you really do use, I guess it's kind of like a zombie movie trope, you know, you use whatever you have on hand. So, hey, there's Christmas decorations everywhere. It's kind of like, you know, maybe a little bit like Home Alone, except they're using blunt force trauma. but yeah, I don't mind them using that, using the Christmas icons at all. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, yeah. You know, that's really clever, a clever way to take this thing that we know in one context and to utilize it in a completely different new context. So you are seeing this thing that you're very familiar with, used in a way that you are very unfamiliar with, or at least you've seen blunt force objects used against zombies in the past, and you've seen candy canes used in the past, but never in conjunction. And I think that fits really well with everything we were talking about before, about how these two different kind of things fit together in the movie.
Right. Yeah. And there's a couple of scenes like that. Or even the fact that they have some kind of strange Christmas program, or I don't even know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's just really bizarre. Two penguins rapping. You've got Frosty being a zombie. You know, they go through this Christmas tree forest kind of thing, and there's zombies waiting in there. Yeah, it's great. It's odd enough to say it, but it's what I loved about the film. Yeah.
Yeah, no, so did I. I'm always a fan of genre mashups. Some of my favorite films that I've covered here on Underrated have taken the iconography of one genre and transported it onto another genre. And it's really great when you wouldn't think of it like this. But yeah, before we, you know, completely wrap up here, do you have any stray thoughts, any other things you wanted to talk about here on the, with the film?
Yeah, I, you know, again, just really liked the character growth that really all of them experience, even the ones that don't make it out of the film. You know, I really caught on to that this time around. You know, like even John, where, like we were saying, he gets friend zoned, and he, you just the acting he does in that scene where he's in the grocery cart, and you know, she said, let's switch places, and she had just told him, you know, you're my best friend, you know, kind of that's mm-hmm. it. And you see this, all these conflicting emotions just kind of flip across his face, and he does such a great job with that. But then in the end, he's kind of like, okay, that's what you want, that's what I'm going to do. And then he gets eaten.
Yeah.
But you know, he had character growth, I think. And
yeah.
And just kind of a real straight thought, but I loved at the end when you see him just laying there as a zombie, and then he turns on the Christmas lights on his sweater, and he's just, you know, I don't know, maybe he's just having this happy little Christmas party all by himself, you know.
Yeah.
I just kind of like that little touch, you know. It's maybe a little bit of gallows humor, but mm-hmm. it was a nice touch. So, but yeah, just really, really interesting character growth journeys for all of them. I just love the film. It's so weird, but I love it overall. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And one other thing too, I just wanted to say before the end here is that I love a good musical. I mean, I think people might get the idea of me that I don't like musicals because some of the more iconic ones are movies that don't sit with me right. But I do really love the genre. I think when it's done really well and it works for me, and this one really did. And I think that musicals have been something that have been pretty much underrepresented on this show. I think I've only ever done one episode that was in a musical, and that was for an April Fool's Day episode. So I don't think that really even counts.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to have that representation to check off that box that has been sorely left unchecked for so long. And, you know, with that, there being this being in a long tradition of great Christmas musicals, although it does deviate from the tradition a little bit, I wanted to ask, what are you being the expert? What are some of your favorite Christmas musicals?
Oh boy, that's
that's a tough question.
That's a tough question. Yeah, there's some of the old ones, like I think Holiday Inn is one, and I don't really care for those. So I'm kind of an outlier on that.
I'm on the same boat, honestly.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's something more modern. Oh, you know what? Just last year, Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds played in a Christmas musical, and I forget what it's called now.
Spirited. Spirited, yeah. Yes. Spirited was great, yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I really liked that. A very unique take on the Christmas Carol story, which I'm a huge fan of the book, but we have so many adaptations of that into films and so many literal adaptations that I think there's plenty of room to get real creative. So Spirited was one that really got creative with it, and I think it worked fantastically.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really, really great film. You know, I also like a lot of the more modern ones. In particular, there's two from the early 90s that really hold a soft spot in my heart. Nightmare Before Christmas, I think, is really great. That's you know, obviously an iconic film that is another genre mashup. This time they're mashing up tropes of two different holiday genres. You know, of course, you know, we've got Halloween mixed with Christmas. I always kind of wanted to see a sequel where it goes to like Easter or Thanksgiving or something like that.
Right, yeah.
but I think my favorite choice, and this goes back to the Christmas Carol one, and this is another kind of more modern Christmas Carol. I think the Muppets Christmas Carol is absolutely untouchable. Like that movie is so good. I love Gonzo as Charles Dickens.
Yep.
I think that a lot of time, especially in those 90s, kind of how they would do the adaptations of a lot of classic literature, like Muppets Treasure Island is one of my favorite movies, but you get these really great performances out of these iconic actors.
Right.
And Michael Caine as Scrooge in that movie is so freaking good.
Oh yeah.
He's incredible. And it's got some really great Christmas songs in it that I will absolutely listen to every Christmas. Yeah. So are you a fan of that one as well?
Yeah. I completely blanked on both of those. So I'm maybe not doing so well here as the Christmas expert, but yeah. The Muppets Christmas Carol is probably one of my favorite adaptations. I forget that's a musical actually, but yeah, I love that Michael Caine said, you know, I'm going to be in this film, but I'm going to play it straight. You know, I'm not going to act like I'm talking to a puppet here. You know, I'm just going to do it as if I were performing on stage. And it really, really works. So that's a great one.
Yeah. Like I said, love that movie. Try to watch it every Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, thank you, Art, once again for being on and for, you know, spending this Christmas podcast with me, and giving all of just me and all of our listeners this great Christmas rec. So hopefully they get as much enjoyment out of it as you and I have, regardless of their Christmas fandom. Hopefully, I think this appeals to both Christmas fans and non-Christmas fans, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think if Christmas is just kind of like another day for you, or you don't care for it, then I think you'd like this film too. Yeah.
But yeah, as we wrap up here, you know, you mentioned your show at this the start. Where else where can people find you? Where can people listen to it?
Yeah, if you go to CozyChristmasPodcast.com, that's the website that hosts. You can find the episodes there. You can find it on any podcast app that you might use, like Apple, whatever they're calling themselves these days. Even on Audible, you know, you can host your podcasts on Audible. I didn't know that, but you can find it there too. So basically the easiest way is just to go to CozyChristmasPodcast.com. I'm also on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We actually have a year-round Christmas book club we've been doing, and we'll read a book. We'll take a month to read a book, and then take the month after to just talk about it. I've had about three or four people doing that with me this year. That's been a lot of fun.
Very nice. Very nice. Very cool. And yeah, I also just want to mention to my listeners, and I probably mentioned it already on the show at this point, but next week, usually this is a bi-weekly podcast, but next week, because of the big, there's going to be a kind of rebrand for the podcast, new podcast art, new podcast logo, all that stuff is hitting right at the beginning of the year. So New Year's Day 2024, which is a week from today. There'll be a brand new episode, so the weeks are going to get shifted back to years ago. This is the days they originally were on. We're going to be back on the right Monday. And part of the reason I'm doing that is because of the other podcast that I part of, which is the Midnight Film Society, which also releases every other Monday. And now it'll be staggered. So on weeks that Underrated does not come out, if you want to still hear more of me, you can listen to the Midnight Film Society, where me and my buddy Damien talk about the new releases of whatever movies have come out that week. But the whole podcast, all of Underrated Movie Podcast, is getting a rebrand. So still the same. So it's still going to be the socials, Underrated Movie Podcast. But I also want to mention that our Patreon is also going to be getting a fresh coat of paint. So Underrated Movie, or patreon.com/Underrated Movie Podcast. And the patron feed now is just going to be called Underrated Disc 2. There is where you will find all the episodes. These episodes will come out a week early there. You will also get the Patreon-exclusive podcast Underdogs, where I cover sports films once a month. And then that's also where my podcast Infinity Stones and Dragon Bones is going to be living. It's all going to be on that podcast feed. You can listen to that on Spotify or there now too, or you can just get it on a as a private feed on any of the other podcast apps. That's, you know, we have options as low as $1 a month, and you'll get a variety of different stuff depending on which level you want to sign up for at, if that's something you want to do. If not, I just appreciate anybody and everybody for listening. And if you can't have the time, just give us 5 stars on whatever you're listening at. It really helps the show out a lot. But one last time, Art, thank you so much for coming on. Merry Christmas. And is there any traditional Christmas things you want to say to lead us out here?
Yes. Well, thanks again for having me on. I enjoyed talking about it and about the film. But as I usually close out on my podcast, I encourage everyone to remember to honor Christmas in our hearts, and we'll try to keep it all the year, which is a quote from the Christmas Carol.
Thank you, thank you. And I'll see you guys all in the new year.